I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Good Friday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny. It's March 13th, 2026, and you are listening live to 106.7 The Fan. We will take you all the way up to 6:30 this evening. Got a nice show planned for you on G&D and one final opportunity for somebody to win tickets to go see the Capitals. That's coming up ahead of the Beltway Blitz at 4 o'clock today. Danny, what's up?
Not much, my friend. This has been an extremely busy couple of weeks for your pal. We got some got a U Sports tournament. Got some baseball getting underway. I irritated everybody last night at our AA draft by asking a lot of questions. So yeah, I mean we're off to a rip roaring start, man. We're doing it. It's all happening.
Yeah, it's all is right with the world when we're a day into the league and Danny is already at odds with all the other coaches.
You're kind of exaggerating, but it's also not that far from 100% correct. I think I could tell this is a trait that I have that my wife has tried to shame out of me over the years. Even when I can sense, I've got a decent amount of the EQ. Even when I sense everyone's annoyed, if I've got that bone, like if I'm the dog on the mailman's hind parts, I can't let it go. This thing is bothering me. I got to keep asking about it. But yeah, so I added probably 15 or 20 minutes to last night's draft whenever we want to just get it done and go home.
I've been blown away just as a fly on the wall, as a guy looking over Danny's shoulder at the prep that has gone into a youth baseball draft. I've been doing a lot of joning. Danny has been scouring tape like he's Paul Taboni.
Seriously.
I just can't fathom it. When I was a kid, you just got assigned to teams based on like the letter of your last name or how close you live to the coach. And now Danny's out here putting together scouting reports, arguing over which kid should go in which round. It's unbelievable.
It's a different world, man, different time. Yeah, all we're trying to do at the end of the day is have a good experience for everybody, good teachable moments, you know, hopefully have some fun. And it's hard to do that if you don't have a balanced, you know, set of teams. Like one team's just, you know, running roughshod over everybody, winning 30-2 every week. I don't know who's benefiting from that, right?
That was the Reds when I was in Little League.
The Reds did that?
We were the Braves.
Who coached the Reds?
I don't remember the Reds coach. It might have been like Brent McCullough's dad or something. I don't remember. I know that their pitchers were Thomas Wooldridge and Philip Liggins, and they both threw gas.
Phil Liggins was nasty.
He had some stuff.
So when I was 10, it was Fitzgerald Properties. Yeah, Chris Peterson played at Northwestern. You know, and a couple of Kevin White, McLean High School legend.
Is that a sign of age, by the way, if your baseball teams were named after companies? Because that is such an old movie bit, like Bad News Bears or one of these films.
So they for whatever reason, McLean Little League did it that way, and everyone else was like, "What team are you on?" It's like the Braves,
But I bet you they don't now. That's what I'm saying. I think it's a sign of the times thing, where somewhere between if you are 35 and you're my age, or if you're 45 and you're Danny's age, they stopped doing it that way, and you started just becoming an actual team. My son just signed up for baseball. His first practice is Saturday. We'll go tomorrow and check out the new vibes for the first time playing above T-ball. But he is on the Raptors. Last year, he was on the Tin Caps, and every team in the league was actually a minor league affiliate of some big league team.
Oh, that's cool.
With actual minor league hats and stuff, which was neat. But it used to be, based on all the movies and based on your experience, Howard's Bakery against Dutch's Mart.
But everybody else's little league did team names. We just let the sponsor right there on the front. So when I was 12, Naval Air, that's a 21-1 team right there. Your district champions. Led by old Randy Duye. And Dan Boyle, by the way. You sleep on Dan Boyle. Hit 10 bombs. Went to Temple. Scully.
It doesn't sound to me like in that draft, the goal was whatever you're trying to have your goal be now. Or was it? I don't know. Like,
what do you mean? In other words,
well, the draft last night, you said the goal is all the teams are even and everyone just goes out and we all have fun. That was like someone put together a juggernaut. There was Jerry Reinsdorf was at the controls and the 90s Bulls showed up.
And he found Kukoc and no one else saw him, this kind of thing.
What was everyone so mad at you about last night?
I kept asking questions because there was something I couldn't understand.
But what was grinding your gears?
Well, nothing grinding my gears specifically. It was more that I don't know how to explain it. I just didn't understand something about how. Because, you know, we're all dads, right? This isn't like pro coaching. This isn't like travel stuff where it's like you pay $30,000 and you're going to tournaments in Puerto Rico and Arizona and upstate New York every other weekend to play teams from Springfield. This is Little League stuff. So we're all dads. We're all volunteering. and your kids are going to be on the team too. It's the only way I could get into the league was, or my kid getting in the league because we were late signups, was like, hey, we have so many kids. If you want to coach, it's great. And we went a whole back and forth.
Whatever. You were trading kids back and forth last night, were
you?
No,
and I was like, I would love to coach, but I work until 6:30 every day. I don't get home until 7. I can never make practices. So I got a co-coach, but everybody worked it out, and everyone's so nice and very generous. But your kid is assigned a round or a grade or whatever, or the teams that are the coach's kids are given around. And I couldn't understand how, what, where, when, and why, and the different things and the policy and stuff like that. And I kept asking questions. And I could sense after my third follow-up that everyone was just trying to get me to stop talking.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. And it's, by the way, it's exactly like you imagine it. Everyone's very nice. And I tried everyone's patience.
Your goal was altruistic. And I think you were operating, based on what you're saying, I'm taking you at face value and I believe you, that you were just trying to have the teams be as even as possible so that everyone could have fun and learn. Do you think it was taken in a different way?
No. You're ascribing a whole different thing to it. I literally didn't understand.
Right.
There's a difference between advocating for something and not understanding.
Okay.
This is the latter.
So you were just asking a bunch of questions.
Yes.
And they just kept saying, can we start? I've got to be home because I've got the oven on.
No one said, can we start? But it was in their eyes.
Okay.
They wanted to begin. And everyone's like, see, there. What if there was a dog? And he went into a house and he didn't look upstairs. I'm like, I don't get any of the analogies. Help me understand this. And finally, I just said, you know what? I understand that everyone's irritated. Let's just start.
What's your team name going to be?
We don't know. I don't know. Right now, it's Team Rouye, which you don't want to be. You don't want to be that.
So will you? I mean, is it possible you stay Team Rouye?
I hope not. I mean, that's just the way it's assigned right now.
So
and like
just
all the different things.
Pick a name as a team at your first practice. Everyone will come together. You'll be a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Or the T-Rexes, and then you'll move on. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Best of luck to the T-Rexes.
To the Rex Huddlers, the Wonder Dogs.
I look forward to the updates. A couple of things I wanted to get into right off the top here on Grant and Danny. Speaking of everybody wanting to start, let's start this thing. Veteran quarterback market starting to dry up just a little bit. Yesterday, during our show, Kyler Murray agrees to a deal with the Minnesota Vikings. So he's off the board now. If you look at who has landed at QB in free agency, Murray to Minnesota, Geno Smith back home to the New York Jets as a different, more mature, much older man than he was when he left there.
It feels right, though, doesn't it?
Tua Tagovailoa, like Murray, after being cut and dead money and sued by the incumbent team. Tua in Atlanta, going to play for the minimum, essentially. And then the one guy that was able to sign for any real money was Malik Willis, who goes to the Miami Dolphins from the Green Bay Packers following Jeff Hafley, the new head coach in Miami, who was the DC in Green Bay where Willis played pretty well and had some nice tape, albeit in a very small sample size, playing for Jordan Love at times last year. Murray, Geno, Tua, and Willis. Of those guys, whether it be fit, supporting cast, situation, what have you, if you had to pick one to reinvigorate their career with a really strong 2026 season, so we fast forward a year, and we're talking way more positively about someone than we are right now. Let's go through the ranking and process of elimination, rule guys out.
Okay.
I think Geno, because of his age and how bad the Jets are, has the least chance to be the Sam Darnold story next year.
I agree on that.
All right, so we're going to cross him off the list. This is like a standardized test. Now we've got Murray, Minnesota, Tua, Atlanta, Malik Willis, Miami. What do you want to cross off next?
I'm going to cross off Tua.
That would be my next one as well. What's your logic?
I don't like the situation. I don't like anything about it. It's a, well, we're just going to have you come in because you're left-handed, and so is Michael Penix. It's like they're not rooting for him to succeed. He's one part caretaker, learning something brand new, away from that Mike McDaniel nest. There's no Tyreek Hill to bail you out. I like some of the pieces in Atlanta. Bijan Robinson, I think Drake London's good, but I don't know. I just don't trust that. It just feels like they're on team can't get right.
I'm going to put Tua there as well. I actually do like the coaching situation now. Kevin Stefanski sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Good offensive mind, stellar play caller, pretty good designer, marrying run and pass. I think there's some things you can work with there. Drake London's a very good wide receiver. Not exceptional, not top 10, but a strong player. And they tag Kyle Pitts, so you've got a couple of weapons. Bijan Robinson's maybe the best back in the entire league. So supporting cast, coaching, play calling, players, it's all really good. Tua in Atlanta maybe has a chance to be better than Malik Willis in Miami. In fact, I'm talking myself into that. I'm going to cross Malik Willis off the list next, and I would rank him kind of third into a second on the list. But assuming
it was between those two for me.
So that means that you agree with me. The guy that has the best chance to reclaim their career now is Kyler Murray with Justin Jefferson and Kevin O'Connell.
I've just seen it multiple times. Like, that's where you go. You talk about weapons. You talk about options. If you're wrong, Justin Jefferson makes you right. If he's covered, he's open. Just throw it to him.
Hasn't worked for everybody. I mean, Carson Wentz went there, and it went badly.
Sure, I think he
really
stinks so much.
The only guy where you could say, I mean, Cousins obviously played at a great level.
Yeah, I'd say Cousins 2.0 and Darnold. But if there's anybody that can do it, it's Kevin O'Connell with Justin Jefferson and some pretty good weapons around him.
I just wonder how well it's going to work. I don't view him as much of a schematic fit. They're going to have to move the pocket a lot more. What Kevin O'Connell has liked to do in the passing game is operate in the middle of the field on stuff with mostly the quarterback in the pocket. Not that Sam Darnold was as immobile as Kirk Cousins tends to be and just kind of flat-footed and standing there and making all the throws as a pocket passer. But think about the Minnesota offense. You kind of always know where the quarterback's going to be. It was a little bit different when Patrick Dobbs played for them for a short time. He was a little more mobile. J.J. McCarthy, who's athletic, moves around some. It's not to say they don't bootleg and get him moving a little bit, but for the most part, it's play action, pop passes, over top of the line of scrimmage. Does Kyler see it well enough in the middle of the field? Is he able to pick those things apart? Tight end, wide receiver, dig routes?
It's a challenge for O'Connell, but I feel like he's one of the five guys I'd go, I trust him. He'll figure it out, right? Because I think our assessment's right on. I don't want Kyler Murray under center a ton, doing the normal turn your back to the defense, fake the handoff, get to the top of your drop, look over 6'5", you know, lineman bearing down on him and hitting somebody behind the linebackers in front of the safeties. That's not his wheelhouse. Maybe it's you're doing similar stuff but from the pistol. Maybe you, as you said, move the pocket a lot more. I mean, he's still a threat athletically, and I think O'Connell can design some stuff for him to succeed. I just feel like he's such a whisperer that it'll work well.
Cousins is, speaking of him, one of the last guys available now among those veteran looking for a starter job tier quarterbacks. I keep hearing Raiders as an option. Now, they're going to take Fernando Mendoza 1-1. You would think that would mean that Fernando Mendoza is going to start because you almost never see a first overall quarterback, especially a guy that just had the college season he had at Indiana, going circuit to circuit, winning the Heisman, not start right away. But I could see a path where Clint Kubiak, who Cousins has played with in Minnesota, is very close with the Kubiaks, the Shanahans. It's kind of this like incestuous coaching thing where they follow each other around. Obviously, Cousins very tied into that tree. I could see a scenario where Kirk went there to be a starter as a bridge guy for a short time before they went to Fernando Mendoza. That's one to look out for. But it wasn't a great collection of veterans as it is, and it didn't take long. Here we are on Friday of week one of free agency, and the game of musical chairs at QB is about done. The music is about to turn off.
Yeah. Again, I said this a million times. This is a terrible year to need a quarterback.
I feel like that's most years, too, by the way.
Fair enough, but I think it's because the draft is so bereft of difference makers, and the guy that's going 1-1 just led one of the great seasons anyone's ever seen, but there's still some, are we sure? This ain't Joe Burrow. What Trevor Lawrence is supposed to be.
That's a good point, especially like it's not a bad year most of the time to pick 2 through 5 and need a quarterback.
Right.
This year you pick 2 through 5 and need a quarterback, it still stinks.
Yeah, you're doing Ty Simpson bits? No way, right?
You're looking for a good veteran, most years it's not going to work because those guys are never available.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, even in the draft, outside of going 1-1 with Mendoza, and I think he's more of a project than people think the more I've watched and seen. I don't know, man. It's just the makeup is off the charts.
Right. Like, I would trust him to figure it out, like over a lot of other people.
Agreed.
But man, oh man.
Watch that offense and tell me it's impressive or NFL caliber and the conceptual, you know, scheme that they run. It's just so much like back shoulder and go make a play, schoolyard stuff. I don't know. I think it's going to take a little time for Fernando Mendoza. And it's also just strange to me how little analysis has been done on him. It's this understood thing that, like, we separate the first pick and him, and now we talk about the rest of the draft. I don't know that there's ever been a QB that's come out that's been picked apart less than Mendoza. It's very strange.
That's actually an astute point. I think you're 100% right about that. Because, I mean, we knew, I mentioned Trevor Lawrence already, Andrew Luck, Cam Newton. You think of the guys that we knew for a long time were going to go 1-1. You just knew. Now, for Luck, it was 2 years. For Lawrence, it was 3 years. Right, where this was a guy that's, you know, had nothing. The only thing he could do was fall. Same with kind of Caleb Williams. you saw these guys so much, but we didn't really have that for Mendoza. It feel like they burst onto the scene, went, you know, undefeated and kicked everyone's butt, and everyone's going, yep, you just kind of have to now, right? There hasn't been that. Are we sure? Did we see any of these other throws before this magical carpet ride?
Grant and Danny on the Fan. We'll get into Brandon Ayuk as a possibility for the Commanders coming up in just a couple of minutes. We were going to do that yesterday when Rashad White signed, and then we never got back to it. So that's coming up on the show. Real quick, though, I wanted to squeeze this in. Bam Adebayo hung 83 on the Wiz this week. Mm-hmm. We talked about that on the show. For the first time within the last now 24 hours, we've gotten a chance to hear the thoughts of not only Adebayo, but also his head coach, Eric Spoelstra. They've been taking a little bit of heat for surpassing Kobe Bryant's 81, for leaving him in the game, for some of the, I thought, embarrassing decisions along the way. I mean, you had a guy bricking a free throw on purpose. They're fouling to get the ball back. It just seemed really amateur hour and childish, some of the stuff that was happening to get him over Kobe's number of 81. I don't think that they owed it to basketball or the late Kobe Bryant not to score 83. I think that's silly. But just how they did it mattered to me. It was a foolhardy 83, if there's such a thing. I'm not trying to take away from the accomplishment. But the last 4 minutes of that game, I mean, he's at the line constantly, and he's just throwing up shots as people are hacking him. This was Bam Adebayo, as he has taken some heat the last few days about scoring 83, basically saying, leave me alone.
If you're in my shoes and you have, first of all, y'all are blaming me. You should be blaming the head coach. Get that first. I was not the one letting me go one-on-one the whole game until I had 70, and then you started to send a double. At that point, I got 70 with, like, what, 9 minutes left to go in the game? You think I'm not going for it? And that's the thing that's crazy when they talk about the unethical part of the basketball. I'm like, if I have 70 with 9 minutes to go, who would just be like, you know, coach, just take me out? Yeah, right. Anybody in my shoes with 9 minutes left? Okay. A minute? All right. Nine? Yeah, I'm going for it. You can't be mad at that. If you are mad, I don't care, because a lot of people, they're upset because if they did play, they never had a chance to get that close to chasing greatness.
So I actually agree with almost everything he said there. And I disagree with the very notion that the 81 of Kobe should be this number that nobody tries to surpass because of the tragic end to his life or whatever. There's 9 minutes left. I'm at 70. I'm going to keep playing basketball.
Uh-huh.
If you're going to take issue with anyone, it should be Eric Spoelstra, his head coach, who didn't pull him from the game. I mean, now, I don't know that he should have or would have. Again, he's thinking the same thing. Oh, my God, this guy has a chance to do something that nobody's done. My issues, again, when it comes to the Heat are stop bricking free throws on purpose when you're up 25. That's a joke. Stop calling timeouts. Why are you challenging up 25 to try to get him back to the line? Like, those types of things I thought were ridiculous. Nothing that Bam Adebayo did. But the point he made that actually made the most sense was, blame the Wizards, man. They're the ones that should feel the shame. Blame the head coach of the Wizards, who didn't decide to double me until I had scored 70 on them. Because it was weird. With 4 minutes left, they put Bilal Coulibaly on him, their stopper, and he starts, like, face guarding him and grabbing him by the jersey when they're about to inbound the ball. It's like, now they care that he's at 70 with a few minutes left? It was very, very strange to me. 57, they weren't annoyed yet.
Right, you weren't annoyed at 43 at halftime.
Right.
You know?
But then they got really upset. So I hear that from Bam, and I go, yeah, I'm with you, man.
I don't begrudge going after that scoring total from the player. So if anybody's ripping Bam Adebayo, no thank you. Yeah, he was taking irresponsible shots. If the game had been a one-point, you know, a game that was going to go to overtime, a game that the Heat need, I'm going, that may not be the best course of action, but if it comes in the flow of the offense, no problem. But it's a blowout win. You're going to win. You probably would be resting otherwise in this load management era, but you're going for something that's hallowed ground for these guys. They all grew up idolizing Kobe Bryant. They watched Kobe Bryant, and he was godlike to them. Surpassing that number lives in immortality. It's not the same way it was with Will Chamberlain's 100. I don't know how to explain the difference, but we know what happened with Will Chamberlain. There's just that piece of paper with him holding up 100. Everybody saw Jalen Rose and everybody else get just cooked by Kobe Bryant for that 81 points, and it's a night that lives in basketball history. You're going after that, and you should. You probably convince your coach, do not take me out, please. I'm going after something where I will live in the record books or in, you know, time in memoriam as a for hoops. I understand that completely. I don't necessarily have a problem with Spoelstra leaving him in. I didn't love some of the things that you said, like a guy throwing a fastball off the rim in order to get Bam another possession
or two.
Which
is neither of their fault necessarily.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're Spoelstra or you're Bam and you're encouraging that kind of behavior, now I'll bring you into it. But I think more so some of the players just got so wrapped into it, his teammates.
Right.
It's like, if we're going to do this, it's got to happen a little more naturally. How you get there matters some. The reason we're talking about this right now is that these guys really at length spoke about this for the first time since some of the reaction. This was Spoelstra last night, who really doesn't want to hear from anybody about how he handled it.
I apologize to absolutely no one. Period. And, you know, going into the game, you know, it's a Tuesday night game against a team where they're not playing for anything, where their organization is trying to lose. We've already lost a game, you know, in that kind of situation. We have players that are sitting out, and I spoke to Bam about, I want, as our best player and team captain, for him to be locked in and ready. And he sure was.
He went full Conor McGregor there. I apologize to absolutely no one. Points out that they're playing the Wizards, who are trying to lose. Doesn't feel good to hear. It's one of those things we can talk about in our house as a family. Right. I don't like when someone else outside the house says it. And that's what happened with Spoelstra there. An embarrassing night, clearly. The Wizards have moved on. Bilal Coulibaly and the boys played last night. He had his best quarter of basketball I've ever seen him play in the fourth quarter.
You're dynamite.
The Wiz scored 42 and got to overtime and lost. So everybody's did all the things they should have done.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to get your quick reaction because we had heard more from Adebayo and Spoelstra. And because of free agency, probably left some meat on the bone there with one of the craziest sports accomplishments that has happened in our lifetime. And it was against the Wizards.
Yeah, it was. The whole thing was surreal, man. It was bizarre to watch. I'm like both rooting for it and against it, and I was a little bit cringe, but at the same time, I'm going, I can't believe that just happened. I'm just a weird little pile of emotions on my couch.
What do I do with my hands?
Yeah, what am I supposed to do?
Do I want this shot to go in or not? Who knows? Brandon Ayuk could be coming to D.C. We'll give you some details next. Grant and Danny just getting going on the Fan.
Our lives aren't like they used to be. They're busier. Early morning Zooms, grabbing coffee to make that in-office meeting, getting to your kid's soccer game on time. Life is different, and so is advertising. To reach any audience, you need your message out there in all media, broadcast to streaming, on screens, and right to the ears of your customers. And that's what we do at Odyssey. Let's build a media campaign that targets the customers you know and want to reach more of, right here in our community. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Third down and seven. A little flip here to Ayuk, the rookie from Arizona State. And he'll bust it inside the 20 and the 10. And look at that! He huddles his way into the end zone. Touchdown over Marcus Epps.
G&D on the Fan in about an hour and a half. We've got a chance for you to win tickets to go see the Capitals at Capital One Arena. You better be listening ahead of the Beltway Blitz at 4 o'clock. We'll talk Hoyas basketball in the Beltway Blitz. How about Georgetown doing the thing they do every, like, 10 years or so?
This is so Georgetown.
Just a bad regular season, coach in shambles, you know, program that's been a debacle, people saying maybe you fire a guy, and they go on their run. They did this under Patrick Ewing during the pandemic year when they won the Big East tournament and got into the NCAA tournament. And now they're in the semifinals tonight against UConn. You can listen to that game right here on the Fan at 8 p.m., pregame at 7:45. Georgetown trying to force their way in to the NCAA tournament if they can win two more games.
Tall task here. UConn is pretty damn good.
They've played them close twice.
That is true.
I was at Capital One Arena for the first of the two games. I think it ended up being, you know, a handful of possession game, but it was a two-point game with like a minute to go, and they've been right there with them multiple times this year. Now, I'm not predicting that happens tonight, but they played some of their best basketball in the last couple of games. I don't think you would have had them beating Villanova last night either.
I certainly would not have, although it was a real shame to see Kevin Willard lose that game. But quick shout-out to GW that blew a 20-point lead against St. Louis in the semifinals of the Atlanta 10 tournament, trying to stamp their ticket to the NCAAs. That, of course, will not happen, but that's so fun to watch when that goes down.
Watching you watch GW blow a 20-point lead was a treat, I gotta say.
Yeah.
Like, Danny is a lot of things. Calm when he watches sports isn't one of
them. That's not one of the things.
By the time I got my computer to allow us to watch it on YouTube TV, because it decided to, you know how it turns off randomly, then it that dies if it's not plugged in.
Right.
It's like there were a bunch of times where I faked you out where I'm like, all right, I got it. And then I didn't.
You didn't.
But by the time we turned it on, it was like a 4-point game.
Yeah.
Like I thought you said it was like 14 points.
Oh, it was. They were up 14 at halftime, up 20 in the first half, but that doesn't matter.
Well, you could have been Mason and you could have just not even had a game today.
Yeah, that was
because you lost yesterday. That was no fun. But that'll do it for now for College Hoops. Beltway Blitz will have more of that conversation. I want to get into Brandon Ayuk. We keep trying to do this, and then Adam Peters signed somebody. So be on the lookout. Maybe some news will break any minute now. It does feel like this is going to happen, doesn't it? There's always been the speculation. It's always made a lot of sense. Ayuk went out of San Francisco. Then they admitted he's not going to be back. And his BFF totes is Jaden Daniels. And Washington needs a receiver. And Peters knows him from San Fran. And so for all these reasons, people have just kind of speculated this will be a thing. Well, now Washington has swung and missed at a couple wideouts. It's their biggest position of need. Everybody is saying as soon as he becomes available, he's going to become a commander in short order. It just feels like this is the worst-kept secret in the league right now.
It does, and I was reading, was it Schefter? Or I can't remember who it was yesterday, so I was looking for it just now while you were talking. Basically saying that San Francisco is in no hurry to do him any favors, talking about Ayuk, right? They're not going to release him the first instant they can. They still don't owe him anything.
Yeah, we'll grab the audio. He basically said, not in as many words, but essentially, he screwed them for a long time, and now they're screwing him back. Like, he wants to be available to sign. They don't necessarily want to grant him that. This was Schefter on ESPN yesterday.
Well, first and foremost, I know it says that they're planning to release him, but I'd like to add on that they're not planning to release him anytime soon.
Okay.
They essentially have no guaranteed money left in his contract, so they can hold on to him for the time being. They could hold on to him in the draft and see if they could flip him for a pick at that point in time. They could hold on to him until June. They've paid him an awful lot of money. I don't think this is happening anytime soon, despite the report. And I think that they'll be holding on to him for a little while to see if there's any trade value at all. Washington does make a lot of sense. He played with Jaden Daniels in college. They're very close. Jaden Daniels, I'm sure, would love to play again with Brandon Ayuk. But I don't get the sense that the 49ers are in any rush to move on from Brandon Ayuk, even though we know eventually they will.
They're slow playing it.
Yeah, I would too, by the way.
Borderline messed up, but then again, he kind of did you dirty, so now you just do him dirty back.
Yeah, it's not the type of thing you want to major in, because it's very reminiscent of the Bruce Allen / Dan Snyder stare down with Trent Williams. What's the upside here? What are we trying to do? That was a case of, we need to trade the player, or hopefully you bring him back into the fold and you'd like him to play for you. They, of course, got minimum value and handled it poorly, but I guess they won the contest. This is a, we know it's over. You ain't playing for us. We don't want you to play for us. We can't wait to be rid of you. But we're also not just doing you any favors here, right? We still have some leverage in this case. Not much, but some. And we can't inflict the pain on you that you inflicted on us, but here's some. Here's a little taste back of somebody not acting in a professional way. I would do that sort of stuff. Again, you don't want to major in it because it all of a sudden become a sort of color stuff, and now you've got vendettas, and it doesn't help you win football games necessarily. But after what he pulled last season, I'm not just giving him what he wants the instant he wants it.
Absolutely not. Here's where I want to open the phones on this, though. This will be the topic I want people to chime in on. Because occasionally we get the opportunity, the beauty of radio compared to all the other ways to provide content on this team is we get that immediacy to talk to people on the phones. And I am interested in touching the people on just the temperature on Ayuk. And if you are more open after a week of free agency with nothing at wide receiver to this possibility, are you growing in your intrigue or interest about this player? 800-636-1067. I am. Now, grade this on a curve, okay? I was a 0 on my 1 to 10 scale of how badly would you like Brandon Ayuk as recently as a week ago. A 0. I think what he did in San Francisco is borderline unprecedented. It gives me, what's beyond pause? No interest? I mean, it gives me massive reservations when a guy gets paid and can't rehab an injury, can't show up, can't post, falls out of favor after a team gets down on a knee. Normally, see Terry McLaurin in Washington, it's the you haven't proposed to me fight. It's the you're tagging me, you're giving me 1 year, you won't give me the long-term deal. That's a normal butting of heads between a player and a team. Yeah. This was after the mega contract. You never see issues continue after that. They did with this player. So I wanted nothing to do with him. When you combine that with the injury, it was very serious ACLs and all the CLs and the Ls in the knee. And you're wondering, is he ever going to be the same? Will he be back? I also think there's some questions on Brandon Ayuk in terms of he was at his best when we fell in love with him. When I ranked him a borderline top 10 receiver in the NFL, he's catching balls from a $50 million quarterback in Brock Purdy. He's got a guy taking attention away who might be the best pass-catching weapon in the league out of the backfield in Christian McCaffrey. He's got an elite weapon at wide receiver who's being accounted for at that point, you know, an all-pro caliber guy in Deebo Samuel. And he might have the best tight end in football, if it wasn't Travis Kelce at that time, in George Kittle as well. So you're not getting the type of attention you're going to get as a wide receiver one elsewhere. Is he who we think he is as a player, even if he is back to normal and fully healthy, which is a question mark? So I had all these reservations and things floating around in my head, and it's why I was a zero. But if the price is right, and we're trending toward the price being basically nothing, I don't think this is a $10 million show-me deal. I think this is a couple of million, welcome to the team, you better act right deal. If that's what we're talking about, and by the way, they don't have any receivers. It's McLaurin and Luke and Treylon Burks, and that's it right now. Of course my interest has gone up. Now, where is it out of a 1 to 10? I guess I'm now at a 2.5, a 3. I'm not excited about this. It might work out, but what happens if it works out? He gives you a fool's gold season, now I've got to pay this guy? And I'm supposed to pretend like as soon as you pay him, all your problems go away? Ask Kyle Shanahan about that. Ask the Niners about that. Normally, that's true. Pay a guy, the problems go away. The problems got worse. They were exacerbated when that happened in San Francisco. So it's just not a culture move for me. It's not a brotherhood move for me. But am I into it more than I was? Yes, because they are desperate. And this is, when you start to get desperate, you start to get a little bit more interested in things maybe you wouldn't normally. I don't want to eat at that restaurant I don't like, but now I haven't eaten all day, and now you're telling me I can't cook anything, so okay, I'll take the takeout order. I'll have something that you ordered that you're not going to eat. And that's kind of where I'm at on Brandon Ayuk. I've gone from a zero to a 2.5.
Yeah, as long as this is a Sean Couturier or a Trevor Zegras or a Noah Cates situation, those are flyers, I'm fine with it. When it becomes the plan, alarm bells should be going off for everybody. Like, if it gets beyond a cursory amount that it will take to help you relocate you and any loved ones to the East Coast, people should be freaking out about it. Because, again, what I've been worried about the whole time is, we got Ayuk. It's all coming together. That can't be it. Because, again, in addition to the cancerous activity that he engaged in, are we sure that knee is fine? He didn't rehab. Like, that's the underlying part of this to me.
He didn't show up to rehab.
He didn't do the thing that you have to do to get your knee back together. So I have no idea. Now, again, this could all blow up with a medical or who knows. They could go full Ravens on it. But I'm basically going, there are so many red flag, buyer beware type parts of this that I can't commit any resources. If there's a multi-year deal, I'll freak out. If it's too much money, even for 1 year, because that'll mean that we're done working at the position and it's now the Noah Brown tier again. I just can't count on him.
I want to drill down next on the difference. Is it a financial thing? Is it about money? Like, how much money? What is the difference between him being the plan and a flyer? Because I agree with you. You're saying it's got to be a flyer. He's got to be Travis Konecny. Great. What's the difference between him being viewed as a flyer versus the eggs being put in his basket? Is that just how much he's making? We'll do that next. Also, 800-636-1067. Are you coming around on Brandon Ayuk as Washington's receiver position becomes more and more of a question with fewer options available? This is The Fan.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday you'll hear us and see us chatting with big name celebrities.
And every Monday you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
All signs point to Brandon Ayuk joining the Commanders whenever the Niners get around to allowing him to find a new home. They're just going to take their sweet time doing so, they're in no rush to help him out. I actually want to play the TJ Houshmandzadeh audio on Brandon Ayuk in a moment. Did you hear this?
I did.
So this is the one that should give you pause, because TJ Houshmandzadeh, the great commercial, I can't hear his name still. It's 15 years old, but the old fantasy commercial where it's like, Houshmandzadeh.
Houshmandzadeh.
And everyone just throwing names out there.
You sleep on the fact that he played Rugrat in The Wolf of Wall Street. That same actor who did the Houshmandzadeh.
I know TJ Houshmandzadeh didn't play that.
No, he didn't do that.
So the actor that said that in the commercial?
Yeah.
Okay. I do sleep on that. I'll take your word for that.
Mm-hmm.
But he trained Ayuk. I don't know how serious their relationship was, but I know he's been listed at different points as like his route running coach or whatever. But this is a guy that's been in Ayuk's corner that knows the player well. I don't know if they're still close or not, but has a very personal relationship with him. And he's doing the thing that I'm doing. Like, it's one thing for me to sit here as a, you know, corpulent radio host and just tell you that Brandon Ayuk is a walking red flag as a football player. But listen to Houshmandzadeh, who, again, is his former instructor of some type.
Listen, man, I know B.A. I haven't talked to him in a while. Know him very well, though, but I haven't spoken with him in a while. Yes, they should want him.
Okay.
But you got to be careful.
Hmm.
And I say this, I like B.A., but I said this last week about Stephon Diggs, and this normally only happens when a player starts to get older. B.A. is still really young, fast, quick, explosive, but what he did last year is kind of crazy. You got all this guaranteed money. You ain't showing up. You're getting fined. And you basically forego, what was it, over $30 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
Over $30 million? Like, if you're a team and you give him a good contract, is this what you're going to get?
Mm.
Because this is what he has shown us. Signed his deal with the Niners. Bad luck, he gets hurt. Don't want that. But it's how he handled everything after that. Yes, he's going to get signed. But if you're a team, you got to structure that contract the right way.
Talk about
you got to make sure that you protect yourself because of what he's shown you to be. You know John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, they talking to their people across the NFL,
mm-hmm.
telling them everything that went down and how it occurred. And so, yes, I would want him on my team. I would. But it got to be at the right price. I got to make sure financially that we are protected as a team and organization.
That's TJ Houshmandzadeh talking about Brandon Ayuk. He said straight up, it's kind of crazy what he did. And that is, I will tell you, the perception from around the league. Now, I haven't talked to anybody in the last few days, but I remember when this story broke last year that he had stopped coming to rehab and that the money was off the table and the guarantees would be taken away. Everyone's first thought was, oh, he's going to fight this. The NFLPA is going to come for San Francisco. And then he was like, yeah, they're kind of right. I'm paraphrasing, but the NFLPA wanted nothing to do with it.
Yep.
They didn't push back at all. They're like, yeah, there's not a case here. When people heard that, it was a, oh my God, this is one of the most surreal all-time, what are you doing to a player, universal feelings we've ever seen.
This is the easiest thing to do in the world. It sucks that you're hurt and you're not playing. All you got to do. I mean, we talked about this with Steven Strasburg, whose, you know, quality of life was altered with all the injuries and surgeries and stuff. Once a month, you come to the facility, you get poked and prodded, you jog around the outfield, you know, you pick up a paperweight, and then you go back home. And you're in $30 million, whatever the hell the number is. You don't have to do awful. It sucks. It's painstaking. It's not fun rehabbing an injury, but it's just what you do as a pro. It's what you do as a college player. It's what you do as a high school player.
Not him.
He couldn't be bothered to do it. It's insane.
But he's very close with Jaden Daniels, a relationship that you would assume would help him get right in whatever way he needs to mentally, and I'm saying as a football player. And I do come back to the desperation for Washington at the position. Guys like him only become available when there's baggage. Because if it works out, if he's healthy, and he did rehab on his own well enough, and he does get back to being Brandon Ayuk pre-injury, you're getting a legitimate wide receiver one at a point of the offseason and at a price point where it should not be possible. So the question is, and we're going to hit the phones hard on this next, 800-636-1067, are you guys in? And can you talk yourself into getting into the Brandon Ayuk business with all of the baggage? And has that changed based on this week and the lack of wide receiver help added? G&D on the Fan.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.